Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for May 8th, 2011, a Mother's Day episode of the Kudzu Vine. Since Mother's Day is always on a Sunday, we always have a Mother's Day show. And with me is Catherine Smith. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome from Atlanta.
Yes, and one thing you won't hear me say today is welcome Tim, because Tim is taking care of some family duties on Mother's Day, probably making his wife, the mother of his children, happy by helping out with some family matters that came up today. But I believe right off the bat, and I don't recognize his phone number, but I know he's in Georgia, Nathan Smith, the Walker County GOP chairman and the person at Peach Pundit who is covering the Georgia GOP chairs race. Welcome, Nathan.
Hey, how you doing?
Glad you're here and glad I made the right guess. Yeah, Nathan's going to be here with us the first half hour and talk about the chairs race and maybe a few other little Georgia topics from a Republican perspective. And then I believe Scott Aikman's going to come on in at 7:30 or so and sit in with us later on. But, Nathan, one reason we wanted to have you on is next Saturday, I believe, the Georgia Republican Party's going to elect their chair. And we had a few weeks back or months ago Mike Berline and Daryl Hicks come on the show. But we this time, since we're not as well-connected by any means in the Republican Party, and we know you're the person covering it probably as closely as anybody on the Internet, we'll say, which is worldwide, we thought you'd come in with a special perspective. Just kind of set this race up for us.
All right. Just to kind of briefly give everybody kind of an idea of what's going on, Sue Everhart, who is our state Republican Party chairman, is running for a third and final term as our state GOP chairman, and she is currently being challenged by two other people, Sean Hanley, who was the Fulton County GOP chairman until recently. He's decided to jump in the race, and Tricia Pridemore, who's helped Nathan Deal in his campaign to become governor and has actually been endorsed by Governor Deal. So that's just kind of the brief overview of who all the cast of characters are. And it certainly has been kind of an interesting ride to kind of, you know, especially from my perspective as a chairman, because I have to work with whoever is who's elected chairman. But honestly, I believe all three would do a fine job. I'm willing to work with all three. It's starting to become a little bit more intense because we are getting so close to the election next week, where the delegates will elect our new chairman, whoever that may be. So, like I said, it's just been a wild ride so far.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, just in your synopsis, I came up with new questions I didn't even have.
Yeah,
but to be polite to Catherine, I don't want to ask all the questions up, but Catherine, did any of that lead you into a question or two about this race?
Well, yeah, I have a couple of basic questions. Thanks so much for being on with us tonight. We really appreciate it. How long is the term?
Term is 2 years.
2 years, and then it's term limited at three terms?
Yes. Yeah, by our state party rules, it's 3 years elected in years that end in an odd number. So, yeah, this would be that time.
And you said that the race was sort of heating up. What kind of, do they actually campaign for it? I know that we had some of that in our state chair race in January. So, do they do mailers and robocalls and all that kind of stuff, or is it a little more toned down than that?
They do. I've seen mailers sent out to the state delegates. I've been getting robocalls. In fact, we had one candidate, Trisha Pridemore, come up. I can't remember what month it was. I think it might have been February. She came up to talk to our county Republican Party and just kind of introduce herself and talk with us. I think she's definitely focusing on the 9th district and including the entire state of Georgia. But Nathan Deal is very strong in the 9th district. He was our congressman for a number of years and is now a governor, so he's very popular in this area. And I believe she just wants to get a lot of support from this area. So that's
and how many people are there in the, like, what's the structure of the party? Are there, like, state committee members or delegates, and how many are there?
Oh, gosh, I believe there are, the numbers I'm not totally sure of, but basically, I believe our party is organized from the ground up. We began the ultimate process of electing our state party by starting at the grassroots first. We start at the precinct level where we gather in precinct mass meetings to elect delegates to the county convention, a precinct captain, and other precinct officers, at least the secretary. And then those delegates from the precincts go to the county convention who elect delegates to the district and state convention as well as county party officers. And then those delegates, they're elected from the numerous Republican Party or county Republican conventions across the state, go and meet at their district, their respective district convention, and ultimately at the state convention where we elect our state party leader, our state chairman, first vice chairman, second vice chairman, I think secretary, assistant secretary, treasurer, assistant treasurer, national committee man and committee woman, and amend the rules as we see fit and other various things that you do in convention.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, David. I hope I didn't steal any of your questions.
No, not at all. And it was a good little background for people that have no familiarity with this. And it's my understanding these are all on Saturdays, all these different processes you talk about. Obviously, we're Democrats, Nathan, but I found another good reason to be a Democrat instead of Republican. If I had to go through that gauntlet of meetings y'all have to go through, I would never see my kids play basketball or soccer on Saturday mornings.
Right. Well,
I kind of feel sorry for the parents there.
Well, the saving grace is, although we do have our convention process, it does seem to be like, we do one in the odd even year, numbered years, and the presidential election to elect delegates to the national convention during the presidential election. But to put it all in perspective, unless in my county specifically, we are well under the 80,000 county citizen limit. So we actually hold our precinct mass meetings and county convention on the same day. The larger counties like Whitfield, Cobb, Fulton, they actually do have their precinct mass meetings on a separate Saturday. So they do have to do four Saturdays, but we just have, if you're wanting to go from the precinct level all the way to the state convention here in Walker County, it's just a matter of three Saturdays. You hate to give up a Saturday, but we're family friendly, and we invite people who want to bring their family and get their kids involved. I think it's a great way to at least hang out with family, meet new people, things like that. But I can understand the little misgivings of giving up a Saturday, but I believe the cause is good.
Oh, yeah, I'm just kidding around. I had to miss one Saturday of my daughter's basketball this year because of our election. But now get into the nitty-gritty of this. Me as a Democrat, I've seen that Sue Everhart was the chair when the Republicans had, I mean, frankly, a very successful 2010 election year. Why in the world does she not have unanimous support? I mean, to me, it's kind of like a coach that wins the Super Bowl or something. Who's wanting to get rid of them? Why are people running against her?
You know, honestly, I'm not really sure of the different reasons, but I'm pretty sure that there are, you know, people have their own individual reasons. I'm sure some of them are, well, we just need change in the party structure. Some disagree with the previous election that Sue didn't use enough funds in the second district to defeat Bishop down there in the second district. Her response to that was, well, we were going into the election cycle believing that we would actually end up with a runoff between Governor Deal and Roy Barnes. So she held back a sufficient number of funds or amount of funds to throw into a, you know, potential runoff, which, you know, the day before we were kind of, you know, there was a lot of tension, thought, oh gosh, you know, we're going to have to go into December thinking, you know, go, or actually I guess it was the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, going into that thinking, all right, well, we got to work through Thanksgiving, you know, with a runoff. But thankfully for us, you know, that didn't happen. But I know that was one argument. Other people just, you know, probably don't agree how she is handling the party. So I believe it's just something that, you know, people have their own decisions or their own reasons why they don't like or don't like Sue.
Yes. Now, you spoke about Tricia Pridemore, who apparently is backed by the governor, who's the head of the party. And I know at times back in the 80s and 90s when we had a Democratic governor, whoever the governor said was going to be the party chair, I mean, that was a done deal. Why is that not the case in the Republican Party? I mean, it seems like if the leader of the party, by, you know, having the governor's office, wants something, then it would be pretty hard to go against him. Is it, does this really give her a leg up or not?
Well, actually, you know, back during 2007, Governor Perdue actually had a specified candidate that he was backing, and Sue was actually the underdog. And the grassroots spoke and said, we won't sue. And, you know, the governor at the time was just handed a defeat. And personally, in my line of view or in my point of view, the governor, although I like Governor Deal, I think he's been, although he's asked for the job, he's been handed a lot of tough issues. You know, we had the ice storms, or the ice storm at the beginning of, very beginning of his term, having to handle HOPE, various other, you know, legislative things, the tornadoes that ravished, that's really personal to me. In fact, one tornado struck about 50 to 100 yards away from my house. But anyway, get back on subject. He's been, you know, a good, great governor so far, but I believe the governor just needs to stand back and govern the state and let the grassroots choose who we want to lead the party rather than get, you know, a message from the governor saying, I want this person to be your leader. I don't believe that's how we should operate.
Yeah, and you, actually that's something that a lot of Democratic activists agree with, too, just obviously for their own party. So it's interesting,
right,
to see how you have two different parties that have agreement on how their party should be run, you know, by the activists being the political apparatus being separate from the legislative or government apparatus. Well, the final candidate you mentioned was Sean Hanley, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you said he was GOP chair. Now, of Fulton County, and I find that kind of interesting that the current Democratic chair, it was the chair of Gwinnett County, one of the big Republican vote counties in the state of Georgia, and obviously when Democrats are successful, they get a ton of votes out of Fulton County.
Do you kind of see the irony, or does it possibly hurt him that he comes from a much more Democratic county than a lot of counties in the state? Or is that not really a factor?
You know, that's hard to say. Honestly, I don't know too much about him. I've met him a few times, and I've heard him in the debate that the Georgia Associate of College Republicans put on back in February. I believe he would be a very good chairman, but, you know, and he's also described how he's implemented technology, which I do agree that we need better technology, but that should not be the – you can't really replace technology with, you know, like phone calls and face-to-face contact to get votes. But whether or not that, you know, him being from Fulton County will affect that outcome, I'm not really sure, honestly.
Yes. Well, you mentioned that Governor Deal's gotten involved in the race. Has either Johnny Isaacson or Saxby Chambliss or any other statewide officials gotten involved, and if so, behind whom?
I believe there has been at least one congressman. His name leaves my mind at the at the current moment, especially since there have been so many, you know, all these chair, or at least Trisha's released so many endorsements from various people around the state that, you know, I've just lost. I want to say Congressman Westmoreland, but I'm not totally sure. So I don't want to say something, you know, I don't want to say that for absolute assurance and that not be true. But I know of at least one congressman that has endorsed her, I believe. I believe Eric Johnson may have as well. Again, I'm not totally certain. Basically, the big dog is Governor Deal, and that's, you know, he's been definitely promoting his candidate around the state and, you know, encouraging folks to vote for her.
Yes, now apparently Trisha Pridemore has a lot of people backing her. Where does Sue Everhart's base come from, if you will, even though she's an incumbent?
You know, I believe in the Atlanta metro area, and I believe that she does have a lot of support outside of the metro area, but that seems, and honestly, if I did a post on Peach Bunnet after, actually, I posted one from our congressional district, and others posted, I believe, their straw poll results from across the state, and it does look like Sue will probably win, maybe even on the first ballot, although just because people are at the district convention doesn't mean they're going to be at the state convention, and the, you know, the political makeup could be completely and totally different.
Yeah, sometimes those straw polls are kind of misleading when it's for president or some other office, but I guess if the folks at this one election make up your next election, then those results will be a little more accurate. Well, Catherine, do you have any more questions about this race before we maybe move on to a few other topics?
Yeah, I actually do. You mentioned that, you know, what the woman whose name I can't remember, that's not Sue Everhart. you said that she's getting endorsements from a lot of people. Are they mostly like elected officials and more prominent people? And do those people vote? We had this happen in our race where one of our candidates for vice chair was getting a lot of support from elected officials, but ironically, those they did not have voting privileges, many of them, on when it came right down to it, and it was a little bit interesting to see how she ultimately did not win, and it was just interesting to see how even though she was getting endorsements from, you know, prominent elected officials, it didn't really turn into votes for her, and I was just wondering how that was working out.
Right. Yeah. There are a lot of people, you know, there are some who are grassroots leaders, There are a number, or I say a number, there are a few folks who are Republican Party chairmen across the state committee members, people who have ran for office previously have endorsed her. And as long as they are a delegate, they can vote, and that if you're a delegate or at least even an alternate, and they get admitted to the floor to vote, then, their endorsement, will translate into a single vote. And, as long as they can encourage other folks to encourage them to vote the same way they do, that will translate into a lot more votes. But
right. Okay.
Everybody's going to be campaigning hard for their specific candidate.
Yeah, I just wondered if that was, because sometimes people who can't vote, endorsing someone doesn't really help.
Right. And
they're not really peers to the voters.
Yeah, I know that there have been a few that probably will not show up at the state convention and have said, I am endorsing candidate X, please, and, I encourage you to vote for him, and they're not even going to bother showing up and being on the convention floor. So, I think that's a stem. That's a problem no matter what party you're in or what organization you're in. So,
okay, that's all I had about the elections, David.
Yeah, well, Nathan, you did a great job informing us because Catherine and I wouldn't have the knowledge base on this particular subject without somebody like yourself that's covering it. So, thank you for that. But while you're on, there's probably a few more Georgia topics that you would have a different perspective than Catherine and I, because you're talking to different folks than we do. And one that weighs heavily on our minds is redistricting. The congressional level is probably the easiest to get a handle on since it's just going to be 14 districts as opposed to, House redistricting, which will be 180-some-odd districts. What are you hearing about where the biggest change, where the new district will be based and where the other changes will be made?
Well, it's hard to say, but the chatter I've been hearing, from folks I've been talking to, it does sound like it might be in the Gainesville-type area or somewhere around the metro areas. They'll probably be drawn in a heavily Republican area. I know Charlie's talked about, Lieutenant Governor Cagle might become the 14th gentleman from Georgia. it's kind of looking at the way things have gone in the Senate, that will be interesting to see if that does come to fruition. I know we're going to have a lot of people who want to be the next congressman from Georgia in the 14th district.
You think?
So I'm sure there will probably be a lot of wheeling and dealing. I'm sure that's happening right now. I know the governor has, I don't believe he sent out the call yet, because I believe he's still considering whether or not to add on tax reform to the special session call in addition to redistricting. But that's going to, despite whatever is specifically in the call that the legislature can handle, that will actually take place in August. And I believe that's August 15th, if my memory serves me correctly. So basically, I believe probably the 9th district will probably be split. I don't know how that's going to look, but I'm sure we're probably going to lose Gainesville, which is a large portion of our district's population, and we might head a little bit south and pick up Chattooga, maybe part of Floyd. I believe we're going to work to get rid of split districts. I believe either I believe Forsyth might be a split district. I know Gordon County is a split district. It's split amongst the 9th and the 11th. But I'm pretty sure that we'll probably reunify Gordon County into the next, you know, I hope we still continue to be the 9th district, but, you know, who knows how the numbering will go.
Well, Nathan, if they do try to get rid of splitting counties, I can't wait to see Phil Gingrey have competitive elections for the foreseeable future, having to run countywide in Cobb, because to me that's going to be a swing area from the get-go and then only become more Democratic. So that's one tricky thing I think they'll have to look at is Cobb, because it could almost make its own district. They might could throw a little bit of another county in there to keep it a little more Republican early on. Now, I guess the other big decision that Republicans ought to make, since they'll be in control of this process, is they have Sanford Bishop, Austin Scott, and John Barrow that come across the center or the southern part of the state. And to me, they can't keep Scott strong and go after both Barrow and Bishop, particularly when you think about the first year of that new district will be when President Obama's on the ballot and turnout among some key Democratic groups are going to be a little bit better. Do you think there's some way they can try to keep Scott strong and go after the other two, or do they just have to kind of sacrifice one of those three districts?
Well, since we are still under the Voting Rights Act, we have to, and as long as we have a minority in office, the state has to ensure that he is not disadvantaged. So the second district we're already at disadvantage of making that more Republican allied, I guess you could say. So I believe we'll probably go after Barrow. I'm sure we're going to adjust the 8th district to allow Congressman Scott to continue to be elected in that area. So as for Bishop, that's probably something that has been looked at. We might try, you know, I'm sure the legislature is going to look at all the different scenarios and see how we can make it a little bit more Republican leaning, or at least make it more competitive and something that will satisfy the Justice Department as well.
Yeah, Nathan, I tell you what, we've talked about this a lot on the show, and no one's ever pointed out what you pointed out about the Civil Rights Act and Sanford Bishop, because I think everybody sees that Sanford Bishop might be a little more vulnerable with just even districts than John Barrow would be, but because of what you mentioned, which is obviously federal law, it can't just be the same dynamic, and so I think you made a great point there and pointed out something to us and our listeners that we hadn't discussed before. Well, Nathan, I want to thank you for coming on the Kudzu Vine and spending a half hour with us, filling us on that Georgia GOP race and talking a little redistricting. And, of course, I check in on Peach Bundit, and I know you're the main person writing on that. And, of course, if you think this first 30 minutes of the Kudzu Vine is something your readers would like to listen to, feel free to do a post on it, and they might collect some more insight from what you had to say.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Kathy. I really do appreciate y'all having me on here. And you know, for Democrats, y'all were very cordial. I hope, hopefully, you know, we can get y'all to reconsider. We love, we are the party of the big tent. We're very conservative, and I think we're fairly nice folks up here. We're definitely nice folks up here in Northwest Georgia. So if y'all are ever up this way, just give a shout, and might go have cup of coffee or something else. You know, you never know.
Well, Nathan, when we talk about horse race, we all find it intriguing, so we're real polite. Now, you get us on some issues, it might get a little more contentious, but that's why we kept it on that.
I try to be very friendly, and, you know, I'd rather have somebody, you know, we have a good exchange and come away, you know, being friends. We might be upset at each other a little bit, but as long as we can come away as being friends and just remembering that we're Georgians and we're Americans, I believe that's something that's really important.
Yes, and I tell you, about Catherine and I do have one pretty heavy red state Republican credential. We both love The Amazing Race, and I don't know if you saw the study, but that's the number one Republican show in America. And Catherine and I, two big Democrats, watch it. So that's just one more thing I guess we all have in common.
Hey,
yeah,
we're
that's
working
probably
on
the
already.
Only thing. But
yeah. Well, thanks again, Nathan.
Thanks,
well,
Nathan.
Thank y'all very much. Y'all have a good night.
You too. Yes, well, that was glad that Nathan Smith could come on and talk to us about that. And Scott joined us while we were closing up with Nathan. So welcome, Scott.
Good evening. Thank you.
Yes,
hey,
well, Scott, you're
thanks
just going to join
for
us through, yeah, covering for Tim and all, and I'm sure he appreciates it too. Well, we're just going to cover just a lot of topics as we go through. But one thing, Catherine, I know you had gone to David Plouffe's kickoff fundraising event that the mayor hosted, Mayor of Atlanta, Kasim Reed, among others. Can you give us just a quick synopsis about that event?
Sure. It was a really good event. It was at a downtown club here in Atlanta called Opera, and I was fortunate enough to be able to spring for the VIP ticket. So I was upstairs. The Opera is two-story, actually. It's more like a three-level club. So we were up in the upstairs looking down on what was happening on the stage, which was kind of a nice perspective. We could hear real well and see everybody. I must say that, as always, Mayor Kasim Reed was amazing. He was very passionate about his support for President Obama and made a lot of really great points. One of them that I will continue to use and credit to him for the next, you know, whatever, 18 months was that we shouldn't, I'm paraphrasing him, but we shouldn't compare the president to the almighty, but to the alternative, which I think is a really nice way of sort of reminding us that we can't expect him to be the almighty, but we can certainly be glad that he's not, that we didn't elect the alternative. And it was a great group. There were a lot of people there, both on the VIP level and at the other level. It was a pretty mixed crowd, mostly young people. Gen 44 is the group for under 40 supporters of President Obama. They fortunately did let people over 40 in, hence the ability that I had to get in. But it was a nice mixed group. There were some people even older than me, which is always a relief, and some, you know, regular, the expected political operatives, some people who had run for office before or elected officials. And so it was a nice mix of people. It was hosted by a group of young professionals in Atlanta. But then, you know, of course, Mayor Kasim Reed was the primary host, and he gave a little, you know, speech or, you know, pep talk before Mr. Plouffe came out. And Plouffe came out and talked for only about 15 minutes, but he talked about some of the things that President Obama has accomplished and then sort of their strategy. And they're ready to fight hard. They are expecting... he said at one point that this race is going to come down to 1 to 2 votes per precinct in 16 states. So they're really going to – they want to be on the ground, making sure everybody's registered, making sure everybody knows about voting and is, you know, well aware of the issues. So I was relieved to hear that. But the one thing that I learned while I was there that I did not realize before I attended was that it was the kickoff – of this Gen 44 national fundraising effort. So I think Atlanta should be very honored to have them choose us as the kickoff location for this, you know, big, broad fundraising appeal. So it was fun. It was a fun evening. You know, a nice group of people. Had a good time.
Well, Scott, it sounds like you and I better go ahead and get our membership to that group before August and November, respectively.
I might check now.
A few more months. Yeah, or else we'll be over the age limit. But at least they'll let us attend events.
Yeah, they'll let you write a check anytime.
Yeah, I wonder how that works out. Well, speaking of the presidential race, obviously the president's gotten his operation going quick And the Republicans, their group of interesting characters that Saturday Night Live portrayed has started kicking off in South Carolina as one big state. And they had a straw poll at their Republican Party dinner. And Rick Santorum really ran away with this thing. 150 votes for him to 61 votes for Mitt Romney, who may actually not even contest South Carolina. He finished second. And Herman Cain of Georgia was the third place finisher. And Rick Santorum this week in Politico poo-pooed Herman Cain's chances because he's never been elected to anything, even though Rick Santorum won one place in 94, I believe, and then was turned out after, you know, such comments as man-on-dog action and things like that. If Rick Santorum is the nominee, or what are his odds of becoming the nominee, Scott? What do you think?
I don't think his odds of becoming the nominee are significant at all. He's just a rebel rouser out, if you will, getting his 15 minutes of fame early in the campaign. There are some more serious people who are awaiting entry into the game, I would say, at this juncture. And Santorum is a demagogue, in my opinion, at best. His credentials are lackluster. But, you know, I would very much love for the Republicans to nominate him for president. It would make it very easy for President Obama to be reelected.
Yes. Now, Catherine, this is man on dog. We know about that one. Also, I've heard a rumored story that his wife had a miscarriage, and they actually took the fetus home to show the children. And some people say that it would always be pro-life. This guy is on the far right extreme on culture issues, if you will. Not really even political issues, but culture issues. What would this guy do for Republicanism in America if he was the nominee?
Oh, I think it would be a disaster for the Republicans to nominate him. I think it would, it might be the, you know, the final blow to the party. Really, I think he's, you know, like you said, he's really strident in his right wing attitudes. I think it would certainly eliminate any of the moderates from the Republican Party. Now, they might not become Democrats, but they would probably just bail out of partisan politics altogether, I would think.
Yeah. You don't think they might shift to the Tea Party?
Yeah, that's like a wing of the Republican Party. It's really not a party in itself.
I understand that, but it might be the escape route for the moderates if the far-right wing takes over what's left of the party.
You know, I'm not sure about that. I think what might happen is that those people in the, you know, those moderate Republicans might just choose to work on the issues that they feel passionate about, whether it's the environment or some other social issues, or, you know, they might just choose the path of issue organizations as opposed to political organizations.
Yeah, or the Libertarian Party could benefit from a campaign like this, since this guy's so far out of the mainstream on culture, social issues, then even if they have some conservative leanings, that might be more economic, and then that would fit better in the Libertarian movement, and then it might give them a boost, although a divided Republican Party where the Libertarian Party was stronger, the Republican Party was weaker. It's just a recipe to elect Democrats, even at an easier pace, if you will. So that's what I think you could do. Now, staying in this whole presidential South Carolina realm, Mitt Romney in 2008 did not win Iowa. Mike Huckabee won it. Mike Huckabee was the leader in Iowa. Now, Mitt Romney did well in New Hampshire, but so did John McCain. And then John McCain was able to back that up by doing well in South Carolina. Is there a way that Mitt Romney could win one out of the first three states, that only be in New Hampshire, and then turn that into a Republican Party nomination, not trying to play in one of the other two first three states? Catherine, do you think he can thread that needle?
I don't know. I just think Mitt Romney has a lot of has a lot of problems.
Yeah, but now, and being fair, they say one of his problems is Mormonism. Should Mormonism be a problem? I mean, it's his religion of choice, and we live in a, you know, First Amendment nation. And that's really one of his biggest problems.
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, but that doesn't mean it isn't.
Well, I mean, he represents a party that has a tendency to skip the First Amendment and jump right to the Second.
Yeah. That's absolutely right.
Well, Scott,
you know,
I mean, what do you
think Romney,
is there a way he can do it?
Well, I'm saying the group that you mentioned in the straw poll that was obviously taken at some type of rally, maybe brown shirts, you don't have anybody else that has been somewhat vetted by the press like Romney was 4 years ago. You know, amongst the members of that group, I see Romney having the most ability to withstand not only the pressure of the media, but have experience at what it takes to get a nomination in terms of moving through the primaries. But there's still a lot of names that have yet to, you know, make things official, whether they're going to get in there or not, amongst them being Sarah Palin, Newt Gingrich. And at that juncture, you know, I don't think we talk about Rick Santorum anymore, but you do really have a serious conversation about whether or not Mitt Romney can compete and defeat those individuals.
Yeah, I think he needs a lot of these fringe folks to siphon off votes from each other. Now, speaking of one of these fringe folks, I mean, we know him well because he's from Georgia, Herman Cain, but on a national scale, I would not think that he was very well known. He finished third and a pretty decent number of votes, not too far away behind Romney at 61. He was at 44. How is Herman Cain doing this, Scott?
You know, as much as I hate to say it, could he, to an extent, have some of the coattails of Donald Trump, someone who's never held office but has done incredibly well for himself in the business world, and maybe that's something that appeals to the voters in the Republican Party, and that they want to put, if you will, the career politicians aside and find someone who knows how to make things work and work, if you will, to a line of a profit, or at least if you're a taxpayer, if the government needs less of your money, you get to keep more of it. I'm sure that appeals to a lot of their base, and you know, that was reflective in how Cain placed third in that particular poll.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I haven't eaten at Godfather's Pizza or stayed at one of the Gold LeMay palaces that Donald Trump owns. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that people know this guy other than he has a radio show, but I've never seen exactly how many places that show plays. Maybe it has a better reach than I realized.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of name recognition, he is a guest host for Bortz when Bortz is out. And so, I mean, that's national syndication. Maybe some of those folks there in South Carolina would recognize his name from that.
Now, that may be a good point. Catherine, what do you think about Herman Cain and how he's able to get more traction than I thought he would?
Well, I have to confess that on occasion I have listened to him on the radio. And I find him to be very confused. He doesn't really speak very clearly about the issues. It's all very wrapped up in jargon and I don't know. But apparently, I didn't watch the debate the other night, but people are saying that he won the debate. And we haven't talked about that debate yet. But I think that Scott makes a good point. I think the fact that he sits in for Neil Bortz from time to time probably gives him some more name recognition than we might expect, because we see him in a different way here in Georgia. I don't understand the sort of attraction that people have for in thinking that businessmen would be good presidents. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I know I'm in the minority on that. But I think that is a part of it. I think that people think, oh, well, he was a successful businessman, so he can run the country.
Yeah, and I think I see it if somebody has actually been a successful businessman. But I remember when I was a real little kid, there were some Godfather pizza places in the metro Atlanta area, and I wouldn't even know where to go get one. So I have to kind of say, how successful was he? I mean, if he was Pizza Hut or or Little Caesars. I mean, you know, I know where to find those pizza places. I don't even know where to go to Godfather's Pizza, so I kind of dispute how successful he was if this chain has not expanded since the late 70s, early 80s in any definable way and maybe shrunk. Because I do know they had Atlanta locations, and that's an emerging market in the Sun Belt. And if they've gotten probably less market share at best, that's not a good sign. So I kind of question that. I have heard he was giving out CDs for free at some bipartisan event where the Democrats and Republicans back when he first ran for U.S. Senate. And I happened to get it just to think that was kind of novel and neat, just to see one, thinking I could share it with some of my candidates on the Democratic side. And I happened to pop the thing in, and he talked about his story about how he came up rather, you know, rather poor. And because he you know, knew that material very well, he was a good speaker on that portion. So I found that appealing. But I was sitting there going, well, maybe this up from a bootstraps poverty speech might appeal to me more as a Democrat than it would Republicans. So I don't know where this appeal comes from, but I think, Scott, you had as good a reason as any with this Bortz radio show.
Yeah.
Staying in on the Republican presidential race in South Carolina, that debate you were talking about, Catherine, Buddy Romer, the former governor of Louisiana, wanted to go to that thing, and the Fox News would not even let him participate. And I look right now on Blog for Democracy, and y'all got Buddy's ad up as a sponsor right now. is Buddy being on Blog for Democracy with a bunch of Democratic progressives in Georgia killing him, or is it something else, Catherine?
I can't believe we have a Buddy Romer ad up. We don't have any control.
You
do.
I look
saying.
Right now. It says the sponsors. I Catherine, you're taking Buddy money, aren't you? No, I know what it is. It's those Google ads that you
yeah.
really don't control at all. I bet Buddy's up on the Southern Sports Universe, too, so don't ask me why he thinks that's going to help him, but he's there, too. But Buddy, why can't Buddy, a former governor of a southern state where the Republicans are strongest, why can't he get any respect?
Well, they said it was because he didn't have 1% of the of a poll or something. But I can't believe
yeah.
Herman Cain did.
Yeah, I mean, look at that straw poll crowd and or whoever else was in that debate, and you have to wonder how many folks actually met that threshold. Scott, be honest, before we even started talking about this, had you even heard of Buddy Romer?
Not in the last 5 to 10 years, but I know someone who knows him, and we had a conversation about him once. But, you know, the average person on the street, I'm sure, had no idea who he was. The average person on the street probably couldn't name three of the people in the debate.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I do see when I look at Buddy's ads there, he has that nice white-collar shirt and cuffs. I mean, I think a Donald Trump tie would look real nice with that. And maybe if he was willing to wear a Donald Trump tie, he might could get in on the debate since the Donald's doing so well in their straw polls. I don't know, but that is just a question I have. Well, kind of shifting gears from this presidential race, which really just does suck up too much oxygen, there is a U.S. Senate race, which, I mean, if the U.S. Senate comes down to just one or two seats, this thing could be huge. And the Washington Post wrote an article about the Virginia Senate race, Tim Kaine and George Allen. And the latest poll that they just did, or I have to see the polling group, showed this thing pretty much like a 46-46 battle. Let me see if I can find. This is to replace James Webb in the Senate. I'm looking. It says 46% tied dead on. Obviously, they've both been former governors. One's been the head of the DNC. One have been in the Senate. So they're as close can get with this thing being more than a year out. Catherine, is somebody going to open up a lead, or because of the way the political dynamics are now and the way they'll be, you know, 14 months from now, or is this thing going to be a nail-biter to the end?
Well, I think it's going to be a nail-biter to the end, but I just can't believe that Tim Kaine can't, you know, I mean, it seems like he should be able to leap ahead of George Allen with all the his little foibles, but I think that considering the political climate, it's probably going to be a nail biter right up until the end. I think we're all going to be waiting for those returns.
Yeah, you look at the poll, it's 46-46 among Democrats. Allen takes 10% of Democrats among Republicans. Kane takes 10% of Republicans. They're very close there. Kane actually is 1 point behind in his own party. He takes 85% of Democrats and 86% of Republicans. Among independents, Allen has a 10-point lead, 49-39, but then you got to think, if you look at just economic and gas price numbers, Democrats aren't at their strongest point. And my gut feeling is gas prices will get a little lower and economic numbers will get a little better in the next 14 points. So that may be a deciding factor.
When was that poll done?
It was done. It was just released today. All registered voter, among registered voters, I'm trying to find, they break it down by regions of the state. It was published on May 7th. Yep.
So it was after Osama.
It was after, which obviously, I mean, while the president and maybe the swaying of the party, that's going to help. I don't think you could, you know, say this should affect this particular race by itself, although it may be, if it helps the president, it helps Tim Kaine. It was taken 28th to May 4th, and so May 4th, actually the end of this would have been after the death of Osama bin Laden. So you would get a little bit of this in there, because what was it, May 1st?
May 2nd.
So 2 days of the poll would have been included. The early part of the poll wouldn't. 1,000 voters, huge poll there. Scott, what do you make of these numbers?
Well, first of all, I think the only kind of bubble that the Democrats can hope to ride from the president's success is an economic one. It's great that, you know, bin Laden is dead, but in terms of that driving people to the, you know, polls to vote for Democrats, I don't see it. The economy, if it was to turn around, I could see that driving a lot of folks to the polls for the Democrats, and Kane would certainly benefit. But, you know, he and Allen are so well defined in their state by the voters, and they're so evenly, you know, paired in the numbers. I agree with what Catherine said. This is going to be a war of attrition for the next year. And, you know, both sides waiting for the first, if you will, to blink or, if you will, drop the ball, have a major screw-up. I don't think, unless you see that or some type of significant economic recovery, I don't think you see either one of them leaping ahead of the other. And it is going to come down to
the end. Yeah, I mean, we'll just see how it goes. I do think that it seems like there's more upside for Kane in that Democratic numbers could get better overall than Republican numbers, although it would be interesting to see if they did presidential polling how Kane stands next to President Obama. Is he running ahead of him, behind him, you know, completely level with him? And that could factor in, too. We're talking about the death of Osama bin Laden. And then on the Republican blogosphere, you know, they compared that to the Gulf War invasion of 91 and how popular George Bush was right after that. To me, that's not a perfect analogy in that there was Saddam Hussein was not the face of that the way terrorism is with Osama bin Laden. To me, he's a much better villain, if you will, for a lot of reasons. He attacked American soil as opposed to he invaded somewhere like Kuwait that was big as a county that most Americans had never heard of before that date. Secondly, a lot of folks tried to paint Barack Obama as this America-loathing secret Muslim, and then he takes out the Muslim terrorist leader. So to me, it's kind of like dispelling, you know, false negative notions about him. Catherine, do you see that these are as a good parallel that people like Red State are making, or a poor parallel?
I think it's a poor parallel. For the reasons that you stated, and also that, you know, for 10 years we've been, you know, allegedly trying to track Osama bin Laden down, and we've spent, you know, billions of dollars on it, and finally, you know, a Democratic president was able to, you know, bring him down. I have to preface all this by saying I'm not crazy about the idea that our president can order a kill, you know, make a kill order for someone. I'm just not crazy about the idea. I mean, I'm glad that Osama bin Laden is dead, and I'm glad that hopefully we can close that chapter in our history. But I have a lot of problems with the issue.
Well, I do think that there's a difference in that, you know, when if our president takes a leader of another nation and at times, you know, and maybe in the past, orders an execution of that leader, you can say they're circumventing democracy. But in this case, we were in a war, and to me, if 18-year-olds that might have been 8 years old on 9/11 could go and die for either America or, you know, the al-Qaeda forces, if they can be at risk of being shot, then certainly the leaders of these terrorist movements should be, you know, fair
well,
game, if you will. So this is a war action. Scott, what's your thought on it?
First and foremost, President Obama is the commander-in-chief. And regardless of partisanship, he did his job. He gave
right, exactly. I'm not arguing with
and,
that.
And, well, no. What I'm saying is he deserves respect from both sides of the aisle for that. Just like if Bush, when he got Hussein, or, you know, if he got bin Laden, he would have been given that respect. But having said that, Osama bin Laden is not a head of state. He doesn't even deserve to be mentioned in the same breath as a head of state. He is a coward, or was a coward. And he met a coward's death, as he so deserved. I would be very apprehensive of the President of the United States having the ability to call in a strike on another head of state. But as far as the president giving the order to you know, basically execute a terrorist who's attacked our nation or giving the order to do so, I fully embrace his power to do so and encourage him to do it at will to discard those individuals. But at the same time, I don't think Obama's really got the credit he deserves for that decision. And, you know, he's been given a lot of disrespect by a number of groups and individuals as, you know, President of the United States. It's almost as if he's, you know, not even a real American president. He has a different last name, and he supposedly has, you know, different faith in what he claims. Well, we can't even find his birth certificate. And yet, like you said, David, so eloquently, he's the one that took down a fanatic, a person who took a religion and bent it to their own personal use and profit in bin Laden. And, you know, here's a man who took this person down and gets really, I don't think, the credit he deserves for giving that order to be carried out.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I saw an article or two saying that a lot of Muslims were actually relieved that the Osama bin Laden era was over because they do believe that he had really corrupted people's view of their religion, and I thought that was a very telling commentary. Now, obviously, there are folks that are on the news, too, that are all stirred up, you know, people that believe, like he did, that, you know, America's the white devil or whatever, and they're still real stirred up, but that's most definitely a minority of Muslims. So
I
thought that kind of...
I like you, did not live to see the death of Adolf Hitler. We weren't born yet. But for me, in my lifetime, bin Laden's death had to be the equivalent of what it must have felt throughout the world in 1945 when Hitler committed suicide. And having said that, there were a lot of Germans then, as there are today, who were very glad that Hitler was gone. You know, that one person has made a lot of people in the world see that religion for something that it's not. And, you know, I can certainly respect anybody, no matter what their faith is, wanting to rid their religion of an ambassador that brings, if you will, much more criticism to their faith than what is deserved.
Yeah, you mentioned Hitler, and that's not a bad analogy. Now, if you think about what Hitler stood for, what bin Laden stood for, I think you may could say Hitler was worse. But then in the fact that in World War II you had Mussolini, Hitler, and Hirohito, all three together, it was almost like you could, you know, share the blame for what or whatever you may say, whereas with bin Laden it's one individual. And then if you had to say, besides those four people I just mentioned, who's the next biggest villain and against America in history. Catherine, I can't really think of a name. Can you?
Oh, yeah, I can think of a name. Dick Cheney.
Well, I'm going
to exclude
any American on the other side. I would, you know.
David,
I'm
very upset with you for first and foremost for getting the Cuban Missile Crisis and Fidel. Castro.
I think Bin Laden is so many light years ahead of Fidel Castro and you know the intentions of their heart. I don't think Castro's even in the league with Bin Laden.
But don't you ever?
I could see
short,
Joseph
Kim Jong-il.
Stalin maybe as we mentioned.
Yeah,
but his cousin Kim Jong Il.
Oh, that's
yeah,
a good
but,
one.
But I think he's such a clown. I mean, he seems while his he just comes up with these crazy stuff like his 18
holes in one, and it's almost comical. They make fun of him on 30 Rock because he's so preposterous. Well, guys, I tell you what, I think it's been a great show considering what we were left with. I think Nathan did a great job filling us in. Scott, you've done a wonderful job in the second
yeah,
half
thanks,
hour. And Catherine, yeah, you and I had to carry the thing and did well. Well, we're not streaming live, so hopefully some people are downloading the very end of this, but we'll call it an evening and go on to the season finales of, I believe, The Amazing Race and Celebrity Apprentice. I don't know what Donald Trump's going to do if this is the end of the show with his presidential campaign. Do you know, Catherine?
I have no idea, and I'm not watching that tonight.
No idea. Yeah, so who knows? Well, Scott, thanks again, and thank you all for listening
to
the Cut Divine.
Thanks for having me. Y'all have a great
day.
Bye-bye.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.